And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, as we're talking to each other today, the Congress, which means the Republicans, have still not agreed to a relief bill for America. And the previous relief is coming to an end within days. 11 million Americans threatened with eviction. Many, many millions of Americans threatened with loss of their unemployment insurance. It's really what looms ahead of us is unimaginable, and it's hard to grasp that people, especially in this season, which they celebrate as the Christmas season, a season of which you're supposed to celebrate humanity, triumph of good. It's hard to believe that people who believe that are in the forefront of making sure that poor and working people in America should be tortured to death. But that's what they're doing.
Well,
and your friend Toomey is right up front.
My friend,
your friend.
You know, first of all, you started out with something, and you said Congress, but really the Republicans, and we really should be very cognizant of that distinction, because people throw around the term Congress, and there's really two houses of Congress. The House of Representatives, which the Democrats control, and Nancy Pelosi, which have been trying to give further relief for 6 months now. They passed a bill back in May or June. And there's the other house of Congress, the Senate, which the Republicans and Mitch McConnell control. And they've been sitting on things until only a couple of weeks ago. All Mitch McConnell wanted to do, while Americans were losing their jobs, where Americans were dying by the tens of thousands, was to get conservative judges approved. Matter of fact, in the last couple of weeks, they've approved of several more. And people, though, and they've gotten people to say, oh, it's both sides' fault. They've got their own cover. And it isn't both sides' fault. There's a tremendous difference. And what's happened in this last bill, which is a compromise that was worked out by a number of members from both the House, more moderate members from both the House and the Senate, really cut the Democratic proposal of $2 trillion by more than half. It's down to $908 trillion. McConnell only wanted to give $500 million. And he's put some strings on it that really, really make it very, very difficult to provide the relief that people really need. But
I think it's important to point out that the difference between the Democratic proposal of $2 trillion plus and the thing that the Republicans are proposing of $900 mm-hmm. billion is that the $2 trillion included relief aid to states and municipalities in order to prevent municipal workers and state workers from being laid off. And it also included direct payments to the unemployed. Right. And the Republicans refuse to allow that to happen. They want these people laid off, and they want the unemployment money to stop. That's what they're fighting for.
Well, and it's hard to tell whether they really believe this or not.
But that's what they're doing. That's what they're doing.
But that's the effect of it. But their cover is that if you keep paying people, they won't work, not recognizing the fact that there aren't jobs for these people to do. And they are so stuck on this philosophical and these talking points that we can't get past it. And so there was the other thing that McConnell wanted to do was to protect his benefactors, the big corporations who fund the Republican campaigns, by having liability immunity from companies that didn't protect their workers or didn't protect their customers. And so the compromise that came out took the liability off the table, and it also took the state and local aid off the table. And it looked like they were finally going to get something where during this time of year, there was going to be money flowing in some way, either $300 or $600 per person or whatever, to people to extend the benefit, unemployment benefits, or to make direct payments. And at the last minute, our senator, who is not running for re-election, Pat Toomey, the Club for Growth member of the Senate,
yeah, former chairman of the Club for Growth,
yes, comes in and says, "No, we have another problem here, and until we solve that, I'm not going to be for anything that would advance this bill." And what he's really trying to do is take something that hadn't been under the negotiations at all, and it was the power of the Fed to step in and to spend money when and where it was needed, so that they could shore up the economy quickly, rather than have to wait for the things like the Congress, which is taking months and months and months. And right now, that seems to be the main sticking point. Where it came from and why it came now is your guess is as good as mine. It just seems to be the Club for Growth philosophy. And Toomey thinks he could get something out of this. He has no price to pay.
Toomey's argument is that if the Fed makes loans to governments, to companies, then private banking will be crowded out because the government will make the loans on better terms and the private bankers will not be able to charge higher interest rates. But the whole point of this program is it exists only when the private bankers refuse to make the loans. So Toomey is arguing to protect something that doesn't exist. So it has nothing to do with his argument. What it has to do with is an attempt to hamstring the incoming Biden administration. That's the only logical explanation for this thing.
Yeah. Well, it's a philosophical argument of a point that has been disproven to be attached to reality. And a lot of Republican economics is in that mold, as Paul Krugman keeps reporting and saying and showing. The idea that if you give tax cuts to the rich, A, they'll pay for themselves, and B, they'll stimulate the economy. That idea was debunked this week by a study that you and I had talked about a couple of professors in England studied.
Yes, David Hope of the London School of Economics and Julian Lindbergh of King's College London studied 50 years' experience in 18 countries, right?
Right.
And discovered that tax cuts for rich people produce inequality, but don't do anything good for anybody else. Nobody. The only people who benefit are the people directly affected by the tax cut. It does not produce jobs. It does not produce growth. It does produce inequality. In other words, increasing poverty. That's what tax cuts for the rich do.
And wealth at the top, the 1%, the 2%.
Yeah, benefits that 1% who gets the tax cut.
And anybody who's looked at America knows that starting with Reagan, that's what happened. He made a dramatic cut in taxes. And ever since 1980, this gap has been growing. It did not pay for itself. We had huge deficits. Clinton had a budget surplus, and George W. Bush comes in and gives a huge tax cut to the rich. And again, we have budget deficits because they don't pay for themselves, and we have furthering the gap. And now Trump has done the same thing with the Republicans. And, you know, three strikes and you should be out.
Trickle down doesn't trickle.
That doesn't trickle. It doesn't trickle. And that's another one of these. And, you know, you get back to Pat Toomey, the other senator who's throwing sand into the workings of the machinery here is Ron Johnson from Wisconsin, who has decided that giving a paycheck of $1,200 or a check to $1,200 to Americans to stimulate the economy is wrong, and that it would only increase the deficit. Now he's worried about deficits. He was never worried, as Paul Krugman had pointed out numerous times, the Republicans are never worried about deficits when they give these tax cuts to the wealthy. They only worry about them when the little guys can benefit from this, and it can stimulate the economy and help local businesses and the like. But they're stuck on this stuff, and there's no way that they're going to deviate from this this philosophical argument, and they're better at messaging about this. We're getting back to messaging. People actually believe it instead of believe the realities of what happens on these things. And meantime, you know, we had some reports this week that are, again, terrible for the economy. You wonder how, with, you know, Congress almost adjourned both houses without coming to a relief bill. Just the pressure of what's happening out there, the reality of what's happening out here in the real America, really kept them there. We found out that the poverty rate rose in November to 11.7%. There have been 8 million more Americans since June fallen into poverty. That's a hard thing to really fathom, but it's a reality. And of course, over the last 3 weeks now, we've seen a rise in the number of new unemployment claims. It's back up to almost 900,000 a week. These numbers are not good. They're like these are lumps of coal in the Christmas stockings.
You're dealing with a guy who is the, I think, the only president in modern times who ends his incumbency, ends his term, with fewer people working than when he started.
Yes.
And all the while, he claimed he knew how to run the economy. He completely destroyed the economy.
And people voted for him, saying, look at what a great job he did on the economy. Look at my my portfolio. Look at all these great things that he's been doing and bringing jobs back and putting the Chinese in their place and everything. But the numbers don't lie. The numbers don't lie.
Do you think that this happened because he had a plan to do this, or it was the inevitable consequence of the fact that he didn't know how to do the job and didn't care to do the job, or some combination of, on the one hand, wanting to destroy things like Betsy DeVos destroyed the American education system, and mixed in with the fact that he didn't really want to work and couldn't figure out how the government worked anyway?
Yeah, a lot of it was just plain ignorance. You remember at the beginning when he was running and looking for a running mate that his people interviewed John Kasich and said, you know, if you want to be our vice president, we will give you a lot of power. You'll be able to, you know, run the government. And he said, well, what's the president going to do? And he said, just make America great again. It's all for show.
Yeah.
And that's what he's been about. He doesn't understand these things at any depth. He just understands how to market the phoniness of this stuff and to make himself look good. And, you know, he hasn't been working since really before the election. We know that on national security issues, he hasn't had meetings since October. Since the election.
As far as I can see, he hasn't done anything since October except play golf and make calls about his defeat.
Yeah, and since the numbers came in the week after the election, he, as you say, he's played a lot of golf. He hasn't been doing anything. We have people dying in record numbers. We have over 3,000 a day dying now in America. We've had over 300,000 deaths. And he hasn't tweeted a single thing about these people, about the loss of
and,
the
you know,
humanity.
The side effects of this is phenomenal, because it's not just that people are dying of COVID-19. It's that other people can't get into the hospital, can't get treated by doctors. An enormous number of doctors have retired because they just can't put up with the stress. The medical system is breaking down. Forget the public health system, which he's destroyed. The entire medical system is breaking down. The amount of devastation that the Trump people have caused, Trump from Trump on down, is almost unimaginable.
Well, there was this, they found some of these messages this week where it showed that the people, I think it was in Health and Human Services, were saying that their plan, if you could call it a plan, was herd immunity. Let as many people, particularly the young, starting with the young, get the virus as quickly as possible. And forget about, the death toll and whatever. And we keep, we've heard about this from governors who don't want to talk about the death toll. They just talk about, we got to keep the economy going, got to open up businesses, that it destroys freedom to not allow people to infect other people. We saw in Florida where there's apparently been a deliberate effort to suppress the number of deaths from COVID. We saw in Georgia the governor's actions. We know in the Dakotas what's happened there with people dying. And of course, the Dakotas had all those meatpacking plants. To people like you and me, it's incomprehensible, the callousness.
Well, you want to hear callousness. The guy you're talking about in the administration is a fellow named Paul Alexander at the Department of Health and Human Services. This is a really funny Health and Human Services. He sent out a series of email messages in the summertime in which he says this is the email. Infants, kids, teens, young people, young adults, middle-aged, etc., should be used to develop herd immunity. We want them infected. And in another one, he writes, the issue is, who cares? If it is causing more cases in young, my word is, who cares? As long as we make sensible decisions and protect the elderly and nursing homes, we must go on with life. Who cares if we get more positive test results? Huh. Open up the college campuses. Open up the businesses. Spread the disease to get herd immunity. What this criminal doesn't seem to grasp is that for every 1,000 people who get sick, 10 die. For every 10 who die, another 10 or 20 get lifelong debilitating disease.
Right.
That's what happens.
And the healthcare system gets overtaxed.
As it is.
Yeah.
I mean, real sense, they followed his advice.
Yeah. It was just very discreet in the way he's looking at things instead of the full picture. And it also, the fact of the matter is that he's looking at the full picture with a very, very cold heart.
That's right. That's exactly right. Who cares? Like he says, who cares?
Who cares?
The people who get sick and their families and their friends. That's who cares.
Yeah.
And right now, how many people is that? 16 million who's had the disease? Yeah. Could we say 50, 60 million people personally affected?
Rand and I just learned this weekend that a woman who we were friendly with passed away from COVID.
Everybody knows somebody like that at this point. Everybody.
Yeah.
There were 250,000 new cases on Saturday. In America, not in the world. In America.
There's something else by this Alexander guy's thing. It showed a lack of confidence in the fact that they could develop a vaccine. Because obviously, if they thought they could develop a vaccine and do it as quickly as they did, they might have had a different approach, although a guy with this kind of a cold heart probably wouldn't have changed his mind. You know, and this week, what we're seeing, though, is a continuation of the incompetence of, and perhaps politicization of the Trump administration in distributing the vaccine. First of all, Trump's nowhere to be seen about this. Mike Pence had to take the shot.
Yeah, Trump said, as soon as we get the vaccine, everything's good. He didn't take the vaccine. He didn't get Fauci says he needs to take the vaccine. I don't quite understand it. He did have COVID-19. Fauci says it doesn't matter. He's not immune. Right. He's got to get a shot.
Right. And the other thing is we're finding that states, and particularly blue states, are not getting the allocation that they expected. The distribution is in somewhat of a chaotic state. There's a backlog of vials of vaccine that aren't being delivered.
And the vials that are being delivered don't have in them what they say they have in them. They have more. How the hell does that happen? Where's the quality control at the Pfizer factory? What's going on? When did they start giving away vaccine for free? And then it turns out, the great deal maker of America, the Americans are paying 25% more for the Pfizer vaccine than the European Union is. Go figure that one out. So a Belgian legislator released the prices, which are considered secret because the drug companies don't want to know what they're charging. But this woman released it because she said, of course people should know. And it showed that as far as Pfizer vaccine is concerned, the American negotiated price is 25% higher than the European Union negotiated price. Now, how could that be?
That's the great way Trump makes deals.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
He's the deal maker. And he's been just totally absent on this, except to pop out and take a bow that we've got this vaccine quickly.
But the real heroes are the people. What his thing was, what was his operation called? Warp speed? We're going to do everything so we'll get it out immediately, right? The whole point of it was not the science. The whole point of it was the distribution. So they've had a year's worth of effort to make sure the distribution works. Within 1 week of the vaccine becoming available, one of the vaccines becoming available, the distribution broke down.
Yeah.
Imagine if these people had to actually fight Pearl Harbor, the Pearl Harbor War. We'd all be speaking Chinese, German.
Yeah, German or Japanese.
Yeah.
The troops would still be on the ships in the United States instead of at the front.
You let a businessman run the government, this is what you end up getting.
Yeah. People don't understand. I've actually written about this. The founding fathers didn't set it up as a business. Set up a government.
That's right.
And the reason you can't run a government like a business is it's not a business.
That's right.
It's a public service.
Right.
It's supposed to fulfill the promises in the preamble of the Constitution, promote the general welfare, type of thing, and we seem to have forgotten that. Meanwhile, the Trump administration has apparently failed on another front. We found out, and that was the protecting our nation's secrets from hacking by the Russians. And as we're speaking, more and more details about how more and more extensive the hack was and continues to be.
But wait a minute, only did they fail to do the protection that they claimed they were doing, they didn't even know the attack took place. A private company told them 9 months after it started. This is a company, this is a government that spends unbelievable amounts of money, trillions of dollars on this stuff. Everything was compromised. They didn't know it. Now, how do you figure that?
Incompetence, bad planning, in charge.
This is not just Trump. Now you're talking about the technicians, the scientists, all the way down the line.
Yeah, and assumptions that were made. Apparently, what happened is things got in through updates in programs, and there was only one company that did the updates In other words, they didn't. They had a very vulnerable unitary spot and didn't realize it, or didn't think it. You know, it's like the Japanese never realized the code could be broken. The Germans, remember, they never yeah. thought their code could be broken. Well, right. codes could be broken. I mean, we saw this week that the Zodiac Killer code got broken finally after 50 years. But getting back to this about, you know, what was the Trump response when we found out that the Russians had hacked into all sorts of our government agencies and whatever.
But wait a minute, you don't know that the Russians did it. Pompeo says it, but everybody else who's more prudent says it appears that way.
Appears that way.
Well, I don't know if it appears. If the people who couldn't figure it out to begin with are saying it appears that way, how do I know what they're saying makes any sense? I have no idea. There's no reason to believe them.
Maybe it's a fat guy in a couch in New Jersey.
Fat guy in a couch in New Jersey, a fat guy in Pyongyang. Maybe it's a fat guy in Tel Aviv. Who knows? There's all kinds of people that know how to do computers. Right?
Yeah, but except the extent of this definitely requires state actors and state
backing. But there's a lot of states. So it wasn't one fat guy. But, you know, there's a lot of states. And the other thing is, supposing they did all this, where's the I heard... the woman who was the Ukraine advisor to the National Security Council and who was fired during the Trump as a result of the Trump impeachment, fired by Trump because, you remember, she talked about how incompetent the National Security Council was, how political they were, and basically blew the whistle on Trump. So she now works for the Brookings Institute. She said what's involved here is no more than normal espionage that everybody does, except it's being done electronically instead of sending in human beings to photograph file cabinets. That's what she said on NPR in the middle of the week. What is it that's damaged? Nobody says. They just said, well, there's damage. There's everything's revealed. First of all, second of all, is a lot of this stuff properly secret? We know that there's a mania about making everything secret, that most of which shouldn't be secret. Thirdly, what if it is revealed? Who gives a damn? Where's the damage? Meanwhile, we have John Cornyn saying, this is like this, Romney said, that's like flying Russian bombers over the heartland of the United States. Why? What's the hysteria? First, explain to us, why do you think the Russians did it? B, what did they do that's harmful? C, what did they do that you're not doing? That would be useful to know, too.
Well, I don't think we're ever going to find out.
No, we're never going to find out. No.
We're never going to find that out. But it's going to be another thing on the plate of the Biden administration when they come in.
Yeah.
Something else that they have to try to fix. And it's going to take a long time and a lot of effort. Hopefully he'll have more. Well, it's easy to have more competent people working on it.
It's not so easy because this thing was apparently, as I said before, this is not just the top political layers. The technicians designed it. The scientists designed it. That's what got broken into that. And nobody who was running it knew it. So are you telling me you got to replace a whole generation of scientists? That's basically what you're saying. Their whole approach was wrong.
Well, we've got to replace somebody and have somebody.
We've got to replace ourselves because we've come to an end.
Yeah. Well, this week is Christmas. We want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas. It's a tough year.
Yeah, but the Trump Grinch stole it.
The Trump Grinch stole it. And the steal continues. That's something we didn't get a chance to talk about, how his campaign and the money continues to be a grift. That came out this week as well.
Well, you're dealing with crooks. Crooks do what they do. They steal.
Yeah.
See you next week.
We will see you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week. Same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City. 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.